This episode of Cox Talking Gamecocks is brought to you by the Mason Jar, New York City. The Mason Jar is the official Gamecock bar for the New York City area. Fans and alumni of USC can come by the jar for some great barbecue, cold drinks, and of course, to watch the Gamecocks in any sport, all while surrounded by South Carolina memorabilia. If you want to get a slice of game day in Columbia all while in the Big Apple, head to the Mason Jar on East 30th Street. All right, here we go. Welcome to episode 101 of Cox Talking Gamecocks, brought to you by the Mason Jar, New York City. I am your host, Tim Cox, where I will keep every episode from 1801 to 2001. And, kind of shaking out my shoulders here, kind of crinking my neck a little bit. This is going to be a extra special rant session, Gamecock therapy session, whatever you want to call it, because it has been a tough few hours, you know, after Saturday afternoon here. A lot of reflection, a lot of thinking about where I stand on a key issue, and I'm ready to air it out. So we're going to just have a release, and it's that sort of Sunday processing day, Monday processing day, and we're all going to be back on the horse come Tuesday, Wednesday, but man, It's an interesting one here after the game Saturday afternoon in Williams-Brice. But before I get into that, I do have a weekend review from around USC Athletics. A lot of the action was on Friday, starting with women's volleyball. Unfortunately, took the L to Texas A&M 1-3. That's all right, girls. Get them next time. Men's soccer, unfortunately, also took an L to Georgia State, 0-2. That's all right, guys. Get them next time. And then equestrian. That's right. We're talking equestrian with a big win over UT Martin, 10-9. Way to go to the equestrian team. But the biggest news coming out from this last week from USC Athletics is actually from Thursday. I was not able to touch on it in the Friday episode, but women's soccer beat Mizzou 2-0 to become SEC East co-champions. That's right, co-champions of the SEC East women's soccer for South Carolina. Unreal. Been following them along all their season, giving updates, and like I said, they are kicking butt. So I think they're going down to Pensacola, Florida. I believe that's the SEC championship tournament, or maybe the NCAA tournament. Still a little unclear about that, but they're going down there. A fantastic, fantastic season for Carolina women's soccer, and hopefully it's going to keep rolling. The show goes on. And that was nice, right? That was nice to hear, see some good news, especially against Missouri, because Saturday afternoon in Williams-Brice brought anything but the good news. Brings me to my post-game recap here. South Carolina losing to Missouri 23-10 at home. And, you know, it was Shane Beamer. He said it. I think he kind of summed it up well. You laid an egg. You laid an egg at home. And everyone was saying this has the makings of a trap game. Got to avoid the trap game. Can you avoid that upset? And we fell right into the freaking trap. Just stepped right into the trap. And you lost the game. You laid an egg. I mean, I don't know what this was. Was it the team thinking that they were better than they are? You know, did they get a little high on their horse? Was it the ranking? Took their foot off the gas a little bit? Something that I don't think anyone really thought about was actually this game was the first regular week that this team had in a long time. You know, they had the short week leading up to SC State, but that gave the team extra time to prepare for Kentucky. Then they went into the bye week and had extra time to prepare for A&M. This was the first regular week-to-week that this team and staff has had in quite some time. Maybe that played into things. Maybe we didn't take that into account going through the pregame of this game because the team just looked out of sorts. You know, I mean, whatever it was, this team came out looking not ready to play and seemed to not have that same juice that we've become accustomed to over these last few weeks. And you squandered a golden opportunity. It was a golden opportunity at home, looking to sweep the month of October against a Missouri team that, yes, I understand they have the improved defense and all that jazz. They're not that good this year. You know, they're just not that good. And you had it. You were in front of the home crowd. You can get your bowl eligibility right then and there. Go into November with a little bit less pressure on your shoulders. And all you had to do was just play to the level that we have seen. Like, this team has done it. They proved that they can do it. And you came out flat and you didn't get the job done. And it's tough. It was tough to watch because when you see your team do incredible things and you see them living up to some of this potential that you know is there, like beating Kentucky on the road and then coming back home, finally beating A&M, you're starting to see things click. And yes, we all said you can't take Missouri lightly. We all knew it wasn't going to be a cakewalk, but my goodness. I mean, just, you can't do that. You simply can't do that. So I'm going to jump into what I liked and didn't like. This is going to look a little different because I want to focus on one side of the ball, particularly one person for most of this. But so starting with the defense, what I liked coming in, you know, under our season average of points allowed, came in at 23 points. You know, that's what we gave up, was only 23 points, I guess you could say. That's one less point than Mizzou averaged on offense this year. So from that point of view, you did a good job. You know, I don't make those specific score predictions, but in my head, you know, it felt like a 24-20 game. I know I said if the team scored 27 or 28 that we could maybe run away with this, which ultimately would have worked. But I kind of saw Mizzou coming in around 20-ish points. So that was good. And holding them to only 6 points in the second half was very solid. I mean, I know there was the missed kick thrown in there. But overall, you know, holding them to 23 felt okay. What I didn't like was we got cut up on the ground all day. 143 total yards given up, but it was the quarterback runs that were just killing us. You know, that guy didn't have a passing touchdown, but he had the running touchdown, running with ease. You know, and it just felt like all day Mizzou was beating us on the line of scrimmage, on both lines of scrimmage, but specifically on the defense here. So it just wasn't the same push we had seen, that same pop from the front seven. You know, I mentioned in a crow to the game to stay disciplined with your eyes and your assignment. And it looked like at times the Mizzou offense, you know, won in that regard where they were moving guys around. Guys seemed to play out of position a little bit and just got cut up. You know, just got cut up. And to start the game too, I mean, I hated how easily Mizzou was able to move it. And it was just another one of those games where, before you know it, in the blink of an eye, the team was down multiple scores. So that's just tough to win like that. That's not a recipe for winning. On the offensive side of the ball, I'm not going to do my normal thing here. I'm not going to do what I liked and what I didn't like because this game was a turning point for me. You know, I understand that Marshawn Lloyd got banged up and he was out for most of the game. But this offensive performance was just flat out bad. And it takes a lot for me to say that. For anyone who's been listening to me for a while, y'all know I'm a pretty positive guy. I'm a glass half full kind of guy. This was not it. And, you know, I've really danced around taking hard stances with things like this, but Marcus Satterfield is clearly not the answer at OC and is not an SEC caliber play caller, and he needs to go. Period. His failure to get our playmakers the ball is simply inexcusable. Josh Van and Jalen Brooks had one reception. Jaheim Bell had zero receptions. How in the world is that possible? How is it possible? You know, I know Stogg had a good game with catches. Juice Wells, you know, he had a good amount of catches too. But this is ridiculous. I mean, we've had some poor offensive coordinators in the past at South Carolina in the last few years. But at least they knew how to get the ball to your best players. I mean, what is he doing? Like, Jaheim Bell is one of the most explosive athletes in the country. He's talked about this year how he had to learn how to play tight end so he could block and so teams wouldn't be able to key into them. Who gives a crap about blocking when you have Jaheim Bell? Put him out as a wide receiver. He's a matchup nightmare. I mean, that's how you win ball games. You put the ball to your best player. You draw up plays to get them the ball. Satterfield's failure to maximize a veteran offensive line is also flat out inexcusable. I don't care that Mizzou has an improved defense. Our offensive line was bullied Saturday afternoon. And I'm tired of saying it's this coach, it's that coach. It falls on Sat. He's in charge of the offense. It's his job to scheme around these things. What does my offensive line do well? I'm going to scheme to that. These long developing plays to get guys down the field that take seconds to develop are just not working. And it's infuriating to see it week in and week out with no change. When Spencer has time to step into a throw, sure, it goes well. But he's that quick out. He's got that quick release. Run that. He's standing there, and then he gets happy feet, and then he doesn't throw with his full motion. And then when you look specifically at this game, you know, Stogner had that nice play up the middle. I believe it was on a third down. That was a nice play up the middle, 12 yards, found a little seam. After that, it felt like Satterfield just completely abandoned the middle of the field in the pass game. Everything became so bland, no rhythm, predictable. Mizzou was able to key in on everything. And yes, again, I understand that not having Lloyd there allowed Mizzou to scheme differently. But even so, you know, one person cannot result in the failure of the offense. One person not being there. And it's just the same thing that we've been saying for how long he's been here now, a season and a half. And I just think we've seen what a Satterfield offense is. It's simply too complex, without a sense of direction. And I think he, as a coach, doesn't know how to get a feel for the game or how to scheme to his players' strengths. I think he's a very theoretical guy. And he can draw up plays fine. And he can put all of this theory in front of his players and say, this is what it's supposed to look like. But he's not saying, okay, I have to get him the ball out there. Here's my system. Y'all work towards it. And if everything clicks correctly, it'll work. You know? But when the bullets are flying, I just don't trust him as far as I can throw him. And I don't take the few games, you know, that we've seen the offense click, or the moments that we've seen the offense click, right? We talked about second half here, second half there, the Duke's Mayo Bowl. I'm not looking at those anymore of signs of things to come or what the offense can be. I think those are just simply outliers, because the vast majority of proof, the body of evidence, is not good. You know? And it's crazy because as I'm talking now, a lot of the things we're saying are things that they're saying elsewhere in the country, like Jimbo Fisher's offense. You know, it's just not adaptable. It hasn't evolved. Stagnant. That, like, we might have a little bit less of a spotlight on us, but if anyone really sat down and watched our offense, they'd say the exact same thing. And I hate to do this, but look back at the games this year, and there were very few times or none where the offense owned the game. What happens without the punt block touchdowns against Georgia State? The offense was struggling that night. What happens without the Xavier Leggett run back against A&M? The offense scored 24 points without that. That's the same score A&M had. You know, if X doesn't run that back, does that game go to overtime? And then South Carolina, we've now lost each game played this year without a turnover. So when they don't create a turnover, we've lost every time. You know what that tells me? That Satterfield is incapable of generating offense without getting blessed at least once with good field position. That's who we're supposed to trust to beat SEC teams? That's not it. You can't wait for a mistake from your opponents to then get some points. You have to be able to line up and under the assumption you're not going to get blessed. That's what happened against Mizzou. They didn't make a mistake. We didn't block a punt or anything like that. We scored 10 points. You know, I mean, he was a huge question mark going into the season, and every single concern that we had has come true. Mind-boggling to score 10 points at home against Mizzou with the talent that we have. And it's not just this last game. You know, I just talked about the A&M game. That game should have been put away at the half. After the Darius Rush interception, we should have scored 6 points there, and then there was another instance where we could have scored more before the half. That game should never have been close. They had one of the worst rushing defenses in the country, and it took a whole half for him to turn to Marshawn Lloyd and say, get this thing going. What? A change has to be made. I mean, shoot. Remember in the Kentucky game where after the turnover, or it was the blocked kick rather, we had the ball on the 5-yard line. Ended up fumbling it because we were running pass plays. Didn't just run the ball to Marshawn or CBS. I mean, change has got to be made. We've seen this Carolina team this year. They have a solid defense, very strong special teams, and those two units, it's just really they're carrying the team, and we're almost winning despite the offense. You know, I know that I've sung praises before in previous episodes about second half adjustments and scoring when they had to. And yes, they did. But you're in these holes and you're in positions where your back's against the wall. And I don't know, like this team cannot expect to improve on its win total with Satterfield at the helm. It's just simple as that in my mind. And I just don't think he's up to snuff for a grind of the SEC schedule. He has his moments, yes. He put together a nice half here, a nice half there. Congrats. It's your job. What are you doing when Mizzou's kind of coming at you? Defense picked up their end of the bargain, at least in the second half. What did you do in the second half? Supposed to be a second half team. What happened? Nothing. I mean, what are we doing? What are we doing? You know, but the fact is, I find it highly, highly unlikely that Shane Beamer lets him go midseason. So simple fact is we may have to deal with it for the rest of the year, but maybe behind the scenes, a change can be made for someone, I don't know, like Freddie Kitchens to call plays, right? But even then, I don't have a feeling that will happen. I just think at this point in the year, with a month left to go, I don't think Shane wants to rock the boat too much. And I don't think he wants to maybe throw doubt into his team, but my goodness, you know, you got to start thinking about something, you know? I mean, did y'all see that quote that Rattler had after the game? I'm paraphrasing, but he said, "I think we could do a better job of preparing for what the defense is going to give us." What? What are you doing all week? What is Sat doing? That's what I'm talking about. I think he just has his strategy, his playbook, and goes, this is what we have to execute on. He's just an X's and O's guy. He doesn't understand the feel for the game. Just doesn't. And I think it's evident. So now this Carolina team has back-to-back road games before facing the final two tests, which are very hard to close out the year. And now that path all of a sudden feels much more difficult. You know, the path not only getting to a bowl game, but trying to get to that 7 mark in the regular season. So it's going to be tough, you know, back-to-back road games now. You got to get it done. You're looking at Vandy. Vandy, too, is not really the Vandy of old. They're improved. So that's not going to be a cakewalk. I mean, I hope it is, but now we can't take any team lightly. But again, I don't think a change will be made mid-season, but if I'm Beamer, I am starting to make a short list of guys to call that first Sunday after the season. As the season ends, rather. I got a short list of guys I'm going to call. Got my plan A, my plan B, my plan C, and I all the way through plan F. And none of those plans is bringing this guy back. You know? Now, obviously, this frustration right now and, you know, feelings on Satterfield, you know, this is not going to change how hard I root for this team. I love this team. I love South Carolina. I live and die with these games. And I still very much believe in the culture of this program. I believe in Shane Beamer. This is not an indictment on that. It's just right now I have little to no confidence in the leader of our offense. You know, this team, you got 4 games left in the regular season. That brings a tear to my eye. But you got to come together down this stretch. Can you string together a couple of wins? Can you find a way to steal one maybe? And it's going to be difficult, but you got to buckle in now. You know, how can you improve? How can you get to a bowl? How can you improve on all that? It's going to be interesting to see. And hopefully we can see a bounce back game or two, right? That's all we can hope for at this point. But with that, that wraps up this episode. Everyone breathe. Getting all hot and bothered here. Please follow me on social media. Twitter is Cox Gamecocks. Instagram is just the name of the show, Cox Talking Gamecocks. And please like, subscribe, and review the podcast. I appreciate all y'all. Go Cox.